Blog Talk Radio.
HR Happy Hour Show, episode 200. My name's Steve Bowes. I am happy to be here. Trish McFarlane, of course, is with us. Trish, how are you tonight?
I'm fantastic. Great song choice.
I love that song. A little Seven Nation Army. Could not hold us back tonight for HR Happy
Hour
200.
Exactly. That was perfect.
Well, I'm glad you liked it. It was a little dodgy at the beginning there, but it came through. This is the HR Happy Hour, episode number 200. Hopefully, Trish, the last and final discussion about employee engagement ever. We're recording this live.
It?
I am. It will be the last discussion I participate in, for certain.
Oh, okay.
We're recording
this. We'll mark that for you.
We are recording this live on January 22nd, 2015. Our call-in number tonight for folks listening live, 646-378-1086. Press 1 after you get connected if you want to come on board tonight. If you're hanging out on Twitter, of course, Trish, our Twitter account is at HR Happy Hour. Our hashtag is pound hash hashy tic-tac-toe thing, HR Happy Hour. Course, so we'll keep an eye on that as well. So love back doing a live show, Trish. We just did a show 2 days ago. We just recorded the HR Happy Hour 199 with Jason Seiden, posted that
you
yesterday,
did.
And back again today. It's been a big week for the show, so I'm excited.
I could do this every single day, honestly. It's fun, but I love it live.
It
as soon as, you know, we had a monumental number coming up, I thought we have to do it live for sure, and we need to do more live, Steve, really. What's the problem? I'm going to blame
it
on you.
Trish.
I always want to do it live. You're always wanting to do a podcast. What's up? Tell the listeners.
Yeah, there's a couple things about that. You know, and I'll even say this as we step back just for a second. I'm gonna ask the audience indulgence for a second on the monumentalist occasion of our 200th episode. But even back when, though, Trish, when we were doing the show, go back to the beginning, right, 2009, 2010,
mm-hmm.
we were doing the show. Pretty much every single week, and really always doing them live. And we had a pretty vibrant back channel, a lot of people listening live, a lot of people tweeting. But even then, when that was sort of at its most sort of excitedness time, the number of people who listened to it live and actually participated live might have been 2 or 3% of the actual number of people who listened to the show eventually, right? The
mm-hmm.
archive listens, the downloads, the iTunes subscriptions, you know, 95% of the listens to this show, and probably any of these kinds of things, are done, you know, after the fact. They're done on the archive. They're done, you know, just on demand when people have time, or they're in their cars, or they're at the gym, or whatever it is they're doing, and listen to the show. So it was thinking about that, too, that got me thinking, well, is the live show really all that important anyway, when I know that 95% of the listens don't happen live? And I think that was part of the thinking I had as well. And I think that's, I'm not saying it's not fun to do the show live, and it's kind of cool to hang out with people and chat and watch the Twitter stream and stuff, but, you know, it's also, you know, the reality as well. Why bother, you know, taking time out to do them live when we can just record them? So, anyway, that's my...
You know what, though? I think, Steve, I think that while it is definitely fun when we do the just recorded version, doing it live brings some element of not knowing what's going to happen, because not that you and I plan out every minute of the other way we do it, you know, because certainly you and I get into some heated discussions anyway in disagreements. But I think that having that element of someone could say something in the back channel, someone can call in and press one and throw a curveball at us, and we can't possibly be prepared for it. And so I like that sort of element of surprise that could happen every single show. So I don't know. I think we should try for could we try for once a month? Could we go for once a month?
I'm willing. I'm definitely willing. It's definitely subject to schedules and all that, but I'm absolutely willing to do. So enough of that. Last thing I want to say before we just stroll down HR Happy Hour memory lane is I want to thank Shauna Griffiths, the former Shauna Morkey, HR Minion, Shauna Griffiths, who was here, you know, with me pretty much for the first every episode, for the first 100 episodes. And, you know, just we saw her at HR Evolution a couple of months ago. She looked great. She looked fantastic. She's doing great. So shout out to her and many thanks to her.
Yeah, shout out to Shauna.
Everything she did. Yeah, she was a big part of the show. She still is a big part of the show, honestly, in my opinion. So last thing before we sort of dive in tonight, you know, do we want to hit, like, just a couple of things? Like, Trish, you've been, you know, a big part of the show, too, now co-hosting the show for ages now. It seems like, you know, as well, forever. But, like, what were some of your favorite sort of guests or highlights or episodes? Any one or two you want to mention? So folks who maybe are joining in and maybe listening to this show on either live or on the replay for the first time, like, what show in the archives would you say, oh, you should go listen to that one because it was good?
Go listen to that one, okay, so I have – all right, I have two that were just – well, okay, I have three that were really fun. And, and you might have to help me remember one. Okay, so one of them that I really, really, really – love, and I actually listened back to some of the older ones even before I was, you know, co-hosting with you all the time. I do this all the time, like when I'm flying, I'll put, you know, five or six of them on my phone. But one of them I really like and always get something out of is the one with Matt Stillman from
Stillman Says. Sure.
Just
that was a good one.
If you haven't listened, Google him, Matt Stillman. He has an excellent blog, and he is a guy from New York City who comes up with creative approaches to all of your problems. Literally, like, this guy thinks like no one else I've ever met, talked to, and he's amazing. So I thought that was a great show. That's one of my favorites. I love anytime we've done the HR horror stories, like around Halloween. I know that was a couple of them.
Those were
they
fun.
Were so horrific and so fun, though. I love hearing, you know, it's kind of like top that, right? Somebody gives you your worst HR horror story, and somebody else can always come in with something better. So those are fun. And then truly the third one on my favorites list was actually when you were gone for some reason, and it was like in January, maybe like 3 years ago, and it was Paul Hebert and I doing a show together.
Oh, so one of your – so that's good. One of your favorite shows was when I wasn't there. That's great.
It was when you were not there.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine.
So when Paul comes on here, maybe we can ask him. But anyway, I think that's when I sort of got the bug. I was like, I had been a guest here and there maybe before a couple times on the show, but I was such an avid listener, and that was it. Like, when I finally did it with Paul, I was like, ooh, I kind of like this. I want to be involved. So
Nice. Well, that's great. You know, those are all great great shows as well. I'll give you a couple, just, and then we'll get Paul
on board
with us tonight. You know, just because he's just the big daddy of HR, the Dave Ulrich show to me was great. It was fun and interesting. He was on a couple of years ago and was such a, just a sweet guy to work with as well. So love the Dave Ulrich episode, the Sherry Turkle episode. I love, she's an MIT person, wrote a great book called Alone Together a couple years ago. Probably still my single favorite show that we've done. And we've had a couple of shows with one of my favorite authors, Kaya Oakes, which we were tweeting with her last week, I think, Trish. She's got a new book coming out. But she wrote a couple of very interesting books, one about sort of indie rock and roll and indie culture, and then she wrote another book that was more of sort of a religious book. But I just love her as an author, and she's been on the show a couple of times. And then I'll throw one more out that, again, is not really in the HR domain, but maybe it's interesting how I seem to like some of the ones that weren't specifically HR shows. The one we did with Tracy McMillan, I don't remember if you remember that one, Trish. She wrote the book called The American Way of Eating, which is all about how food gets from from the farm into your plate and sort of everything in between. It's a fascinating book and a really good podcast as well. So I'd love for folks to check that one out as well. So those are the few. I'd say go back in the archives, search for those if you're interested in hearing more HR Happy Hour shows that you may have missed. So that's it. I had other things on here, Trish. We could sort of blow off the rest of my notes, and we should get Paul on board, as he's been waiting patiently for the next 15 minutes or so. So let's – does that sound good, Trish? You with me on that?
Yeah, let's bring some people on. Let's get this thing kicked off.
All right, so please welcome to the show, longtime show guest, former show co-host, friend of the show, the mighty Paul Hebert, Incentive Intelligence, Symbolist.com. Paul Hebert, what is up, my friend?
Oh, that's awesome.
A lot of production values going into the show tonight.
It really is.
Hey, guys, what's happening?
Look at you with your own intro music.
Got to have your own. I said that on Facebook a while back. I said for all 2015, whenever I walk into the room, I'm going to imagine myself doing it in slow motion with that song behind me. So I
imagine that in slow motion.
Like when you give like when you do a conference presentation, Paul, I can envision you like walking up to the stage, holding up your boombox over your head, right, with that song blaring you take the stage.
All right, Illinois Sherm, Ohio Sherm, Minnesota Sherm. Now that you know what's going to happen when I go out there.
Are you doing the Sherm circuit, the Midwestern Sherm circuit this year, Paul? Is that what's happening?
I don't know yet. I don't know yet. I'm still putting together. Right. You know. I'm negotiating through my agent and stuff. You know how it is.
Oh, gosh, there you go. You know.
Call your agent. call my agent. Exactly. So,
hey, I'm just grateful we didn't have to deal with the agent.
Not yet, no.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. We wanted to have Paul on board just because Paul can come on board anytime. You know, we didn't have a chance to talk today, but some of the best podcasts that I listen to and I like, they have regular guests on all the time, right? We're just like, you know, Paul was just on. I'm like, I don't care that Paul was just on. Paul should be on like every month or every like 6 weeks because he's one of our guys. He's one of our regular sort of go-to
Absolutely.
Guys. So, so we wanted
NMG.
Paul on, of course. Cause, yeah, I know, Paul, really. That's the key for that's the key for indie podcast production right now is keep the production costs low, essentially zero, right, at this point. Well, that's not even true. I don't want to get into that, Trish. Let's not get into the whole, you know, the economics of the HR Happy Hour show because I'll get depressed. But we wanted to bring Paul on especially because we thought we'd have a topic tonight, which we decided would be the final conversation on employee engagement, or maybe I decided it would be that, and everybody just felt compelled to go along with it. And the reason that I thought that'd be interesting was I'm just sick of it, and I put it on my list of 2015 things to stop talking about. And I've had it. I'm bored with it. You read one more article that says, 30% of employees only are engaged. Oh, you know, whatever. Like, and I'm just sick of it, and I feel like we spend so much time thinking about it, and plus, sort of the way we talk about it is very superficial and very kind of, I don't know, obvious, right? And there's not a lot of conversation about it at a level which is actually going to do anything, or maybe there's nothing that could be done. So I declared it off limits for the rest of the year, and we thought we'd put it to death tonight. So, and Paul thought that was kind of interesting, I think, or at least, you know,
well,
maybe
it was
fun.
I was going crazy. I was listening to your last podcast where you were talking about, you know, the things for 2015 that you don't want to hear. And so I'm listening to it while I'm working. And all of a sudden, I'm like opening up my Hootsuite, and I'm starting to type in, "Oh yeah, well, what about that?" And putting the hashtag in my head. This is not live. And I'm like, "That's why I sent you guys a note saying, all right, this is that. You know, I'm out of control here because I'm starting to tweet to a podcast that was recorded 2 days ago and expecting people to know what the connection is."
Yes, nice.
But I'm with you, bro.
I'm on the other side, Steve and Paul. I mean, I feel like it needs to look different, but it is not gone by any stretch because it's one of the major measures that companies have moved towards. And so I think just because we haven't maybe figured out how to make it measurable in a more meaningful way, or we're just now getting to that point, I don't think you can just scrap it and say, oh, well, employee engagement is out. No more talking about it. So, yeah, I completely disagree.
So, all right, that's good. I'm glad you disagree. But I want to throw out an analogy to the both of you, and then we probably should open up the lines. There's a couple more folks who want to get on board.
Sure.
Here's my analogy. Ready? Here it goes. So I'm saying engagement, employee engagement, the way we sort of typically talk about it in sort of the HR, talent, kind of people conversation, is equivalent to how financial people, CFOs, controllers talk about profit, right? Except CFOs don't really ever talk about profit, at least not directly, right? They talk about sales, expanding market share, reducing costs, improving margins, increasing efficiencies, all those things, right, that you move them in the right direction, you get increased profits, right, at the end. Stock buybacks, right, earnings per share, all those things. But they don't really – profit is the byproduct. Profit is the end product, right? It's the goal, certainly, but you don't, like, sort of come to work that day thinking about, okay, how do we get profit? How do we – profit, right? You think about all those other things that result, if you do them the right way, result in increased profit. And I think that's the same thing about engagement. I think all the things that lead to improved engagement or possibly could lead to improved engagement, those are the things we should talk about, and engagement, just thinking about that as the outcome. I'm not saying we shouldn't measure it. I'm not saying we shouldn't really think about it. I think we should stop talking about it in the way that we do, because I feel like we talk about, like, we can somehow nail engagement as a specific thing that we can impact. So you can tell me I'm crazy about that.
Well, first of all, I'm wondering, do you ever talk to CFOs? Because I do, and profit definitely is something they talk about. But I get your point. I get the point that engagement is an outcome, but it doesn't change the fact that you still need to think about how do you get, you know, what levers do you change, move, do differently, impact to get that outcome, right? I mean, I think just not talking about it leaves it to chance, and that's what led us to the problems to begin with. So, I mean, again, I think it's just a matter of maybe we haven't figured out what the right levers are to make the engagement score, or maybe it's not even an engagement score, but just, I mean, when you're having high amounts of turnover, you've got to do something. You have to get people to stay, and that's by getting them engaged. So you can call it something else, or you can ban saying the word, but it doesn't change the fact that you really have to get people to want to stay at your company.
Oh, yeah, Tony, I'm crazy.
No. Here's the problem with it. And it's like I wrote a post a while back that said there is absolutely nothing you can do wrong when it comes to employee engagement. I mean, if you just – the fact that you are measuring your employee engagement increases employee engagement or should affect employee engagement. I even call it Hawthorning, meaning anything you do in your organization that focuses attention on employees is a good thing, right? Because people love to know that they're the center of attention. The problem we run into, I think anyway, with engagement, and believe me, I'm a big fan of having an employee group that wants to contribute and feels good about doing it. Now, whether we call that engagement, we call it something else, we can have that discussion too. But my point is nobody can tell me what is a good engagement score. What should the score be?
Right.
Is it
80%?
90? I asked somebody today on the phone, what do you think a good employee engagement score ought to be? 90%. I said, really? You believe that you would get 90% of your employee base to be engaged? Is that even possible? And what is the marginal return on that cost to get people from 30 to 90? My question is, and I keep asking this, and this is why I think we ought to kind of shift the conversation, is what if 30% is our best that we're ever going to be?
Right.
What if that is the four-minute mile?
Right. What if that's batting 300 in baseball? That's really good. Right.
It's different in every company. I worked in one company where the threshold was 70. If we did any category better than 70, for us that was good. And it was more about the incremental year over year and looking at a trend as it correlated with other numbers like turnover. So it wasn't just the engagement number itself. I worked at another company, and I can share it was when I was at a children's hospital. It was always hovering around 90, 91, and they were always pushing to do better. And I'm thinking in my head, like, are you kidding me? It's 90, really? Like, but for them it was more about – well, if we're 90 this year, hopefully we can get to 91 next year. So I think you're right. You're onto something there, Paul, when you're talking about what is that added value of moving it another percent or two or three or 10. Maybe that's really where the the question lies is in that incremental movement.
And I think there's this whole discussion about employee engagement as if it was something that we could actually, you know, it's kind of like love. It's like, what do I have to do to make my employees love me? So, substitute that word for engagement. What do I have to do to make my employees engaged? Well, you know what? Sometimes it's just nothing you can do, you know? And I think too often we look at it through the lens of what can the company do for the employee as opposed to what do we do together to make this a good relationship? And I think employees are picking up on the fact that if I keep my score low, I get better food in the cafeteria. I get a bonus on my 401k deposit. I'm just going to keep slamming these employee engagement scores because I know they're going to do something cool for me to get that score to go up a little bit. I think there's some people that are scamming the system. Yeah, absolutely.
That's really,
point would be, I think my employees would be smart enough to figure that out. If I can do it, believe me, there's 100 other people that can figure that out. So
hey, let me take a quick pause, a quick reset, Trish. Quick reset, the HR Happy Hour reset. We haven't done it since we haven't done a live show in a little bit. This is the HR Happy Hour show, episode 200. Hopefully celebrating the final conversation on employee engagement. My name is Steve Bose, Trish McFarland, of course, with us. Paul Hebert's hanging out with us as well. We are live. Our calling number is 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you've called in and want to come on board. Quite a few folks have called in, which is great. A couple of folks in the queue waiting to come on board. I think we should probably open these lines here in a second.
Yeah.
Our back channel on Twitter, our hashtag HR Happy Hour, HR Happy Hour. And so before we open up the lines, Trish and Paul, I just want to say for queuing up the conversation is I'm right and the both of you are wrong. Okay, so let's get our first caller on board. Area code 863. You are on the HR Happy Hour.
Oh man, it's Mike Vandervoort.
Hey Mike, how are you, brother?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Mike, where is your music, my friend?
Long time show listener, frequent show guest. Great to hear you. How are you?
I'm good, Steve. I posted up on the back channel that my walk-off and lock-on music would be CeeLo Green, Forget About You, but it'd probably be the dirty version. But that's just a joke. Anyway, hey,
I need someone younger and hipper to explain that one to me, but go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, no. So, Trish, you mentioned the organization you work for with the high scores. Likewise, I worked at a place that I just recently left where the threshold that we considered to be unacceptable was when we measured employees at survey opinion feedback was if it fell below 70%, we were very concerned because the numbers that we had, and we were not a healthcare, we were retail, often went into the 80s and the 90s. So if we saw 70, mm-hmm. we viewed that as warning signs because people were, you know, that they were saying, hey, those were the scores that stood out significantly and statistically. The other thing we experienced was in measuring the stuff that motivated people in the organization was anything that a manager did that showed an employee that they cared about their career, their advancement, and their development. And I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about opportunities to grow, training. Mm-hmm. If you leveraged any one of those things, then the engagement or the feedback scores went higher. And, you know, we were a $30 billion company with really successful profits. So I think it showed in the results how the managers treated the employees every day when you measured it with a survey of over 150,000 individual responses, which we had 80%+ response rate on that survey, it showed, and you could identify very categorically those things that affected people, and you could break down the results and find the causes, which were very often the individual supervisor. So it's not about what you call it, or where you define it at what level. It's about the organization and what the expectations are and really how the managers treat their people every day. And at least at Publix, we saw that play out. If they had a bad manager, the scores fell year over year. If we changed it or the manager changed their game, the results showed right then. So that's my take on it.
Well,
like,
I think that's
great,
very...
That's great input.
I was going to say, I've seen very similar in the organizations I've been in, too. I think you're right. It has such a good impact when you have a manager that sincerely cares about, you know, the team, the individuals, and as soon as you see that person not being responsive or treating people like they're valuable, they either will stay and just be unhappy, and you'll see that in your scores, or they just leave. I think it's one or the other. I think also the fact that you brought up an interesting point. I'd be interested to hear what Paul thinks about sort of that participation rate, because I think that's part of it too. And your score could be really high, but if your participation rate is minimal, it really might not be indicative of the entire, you know, company's feelings too. So that plays into it as well.
Well, I personally think that the whole surveying process is kind of flawed, and I think we're still – and that's one reason why we're seeing – I had that conversation today, too, about these pulse surveys. Okay, I'm going to get a survey out every week with two questions. I'm going to make it easy, right? I'm going to be able to monitor my employee engagement weekly, which I think is probably the worst idea in the world because what that really says is I'm going to start managing my business on a five-day schedule. We're already complaining about companies that are managed on quarterly profit results. And now we're going to start managing our people based on their response to a five-day window. I mean, if my cat dies this week, I'm in a bad mood. My employee engagement score goes in the toilet, and all of a sudden now the company's all upset because I'm not engaged.
Paul, I'm going to interrupt you. I'm going to dive in just for 1 second and just interject for a second. And it's interesting, and I'm going to ask you a question because, you know, I think about a lot of things in terms of software because that's what I do. I think about technology a lot, and that's what that's my job and all this. There's a lot of direction and movement in the industry, the tech industry that sort of surrounds and tries to support these things into just what you suggested, these, like, daily or weekly or in the moment sorts of kinds of feedback mechanisms and questions, like, you know, automated systems with how was your day today? How do you feel? Here's your question of the day. Here's your question of the week. Are you getting along with your coworkers? How's your manager doing? And so on and so forth.
And
most of the people, people are really kind of buying into these. Now, I don't know, you know, I'm not really seeing sort of empirically evidence about what these things are really doing, but there's a lot of energy in the marketplace towards that more because we say to ourselves, well, once a year employee engagement survey is not good enough. It's not often.
All right,
here's
a great way to look at it. This is how.
Go ahead and
talk. Well, here's how I look at it: is you when you're driving your car and you've got a speed limit, say it's 65, right? So you're driving your car and you got a speedometer that shows 65, and you're kind of measuring your speed relative to that speedometer, right? Well, what if you had to drive based on your RPM meter, which is highly, highly more sensitive than miles per hour? It goes up, it goes down, it bounces around. Now you have to pay a lot more attention to that little thing, and now you're missing all the big picture. You know, you're missing the car in front of you, you're missing the car that's coming up on behind you, because you're trying to drive using your RPM meter as a way to judge your speed. And that is just too fine an instrument. Doing these weekly sessions or these weekly pieces of information gives you a lot more data. And you know what, though? That adds a lot more noise to the system. And we've already got a very noisy system as it exists with our employees. And by doing a weekly question, now I've got, you know, 52 data points times how many people on my team versus before I could look at, and I saw, Trish, you mentioned something about, you know, engagement is more of a, you know, it's a directional discussion. And, boy, I'm on board with that. And I think we're missing that part, that when we do these surveys, it's not about me trying to identify Steve's engagement level at 2:35 on Saturday or on Friday. It's about, generally speaking, you know, are we connecting with our people in a way that makes them feel part of our mission, values, that kind of thing? And I think we're missing that part of the equation, personally, the whole meaning and purpose thing. And I don't think engagement scores really get to that. But, you know, I can ramble.
Well, you know what, though, Paul? I think that part of these sort of weekly or even daily check-ins with people, and I definitely am more on board with you. I prefer not to do it that way. But I think that it's come about, though, because you don't have people at the highest, you know, C-suite level interpreting things as you and I are sort of talking about it more directionally, trend, you know, year over year, things like that. I think that for them, having that weekly score, I guess, if you then look at the trend for the year over the 52 touch points, for example, then you would say, well, you know what, even though so-and-so might have, you know, had a really crappy week this week, this week, and this week, it looks like the rest of the time they're pretty satisfied with the way things are going in the company. So I think that was the idea, was that you would sort of get rid of those outlier weeks or days, because if you just do it once a year, you run that risk of, I always used it like truly maybe more like a relationship and a marriage. If you were to ask me on any given day, are you engaged with your spouse? That answer is going to be very different than are you committed long-term to your spouse, right, or your significant other. I think maybe that's why those kinds of surveys were created, to sort of get rid of the outliers. But
would you manage your marriage based on the outcome of a weekly poll? And I think that would be ridiculous, because, you know, you know, I've been yelled at before by the best of them, saying that we can't use, you know, human personal relationship analogies when it comes to work. And I think that's bull crap. I think you can. And I do believe that when you're connected to your employee at a level where your managers and employees are connected at a level where there's meaning and passion and purpose in there, you can have that ability to actually think in terms of like a family dynamic. And I don't think you can manage a marriage or a relationship with your children on a weekly basis. I think, again, it ejects too much noise and focuses you on so much of the negative as opposed to the positive, because we just, human beings, do that. We focus on negative. Now, maybe I'm saying once a week is too much. Maybe it should be once a month. But you know what I really think it should be? I think it should be a lunch with, or a coffee, where we talk about the very blurry, soft edges of relationships, and not what surveys try to do, which is put a very hard edge around every question, because that's the only way I can pump that into my big data machine and give you a nice, pretty PDF to present at the board meeting.
But you know what? How hard is that to get people to do that? There is no way. HR has been proposing those kinds of meeting over coffee or whatever forever. You can't get the higher people go up the chain. I don't care what industry they're in. They will not do that. Well, if that is a fact,
and we can argue a little bit. If that's a fact, and I'm not saying it isn't or it is, then every dollar we've spent on engagement is wasted money.
There you go.
Because what you just said, I knew it would come around to my point of view, Ebert. And they're not going to do the job, then everything else I'm doing is worthless. So I would say every dollar, every piece of treasure we've put into engagement over the last 10 years, and let's start hiring and training managers to be better human beings, and this engagement crap will go through the roof.
Let's all just take a deep breath right now for a second. All right?
I'm sorry, that was my second scotch.
No, we're good. And again, it turns out I'm right, which is fantastic. Halfway through the show, this is the HR Happy Hour Show, episode 200. I'm Steve Bose. Trish McFarland's with us, of course. Paul Hebert, Mike Vandervoort on board. We've got a very patient caller. Trish has been on hold for 30 minutes. I think we need to open up.
Gosh, you're an awful host.
We need to open up this line right now. Can we get you some training? I apologize. Area code 716. You're on the HR Happy Hour Show.
Hi, guys. It's Joan Payne calling from
Hello. I had a feeling. I thought 716 sounds like Buffalo to me.
That's pretty close to Rochester.
It sounded
very
cold.
There you go.
We're freezing up here, though. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Steve, do you know this is the first time Jennifer has been on a radio show?
I do not know that. I trust you about that. This is a big deal. Fantastic. Well, I apologize for keeping you on hold so long.
No, I know, you're giving her a really bad impression.
But, yeah, no, it's great to be here. I'm excited to be on for the 200th episode. It's a pretty monumental episode to be on for my first time, so happy to be here. It is.
You should see the cake we have here at HR Happy Hour HQ to celebrate the occasion. Quite something.
I did buy red velvet cupcakes at my house, so I guess that counts, right? That's our cake.
I guess so. So, Jen,
red
I'm
velvet
right,
Oreos
right?
are coming out. Just want to let everybody know
line.
That. Pay attention. Red velvet Oreos.
Yeah,
are they good?
I saw that. I just saw the that yesterday on Facebook.
I know.
Oh.
I love Facebook.
All right,
that.
So
they,
I have
they,
to tell
they
you.
Keep getting me fat.
I have to tell you, I'm watching the back channel, which I love having the back channel while we're talking.
See?
This is so awesome. And Mr. Frank Zupan has said, let's measure the engagement of callers on hold for 30 minutes. How about that measurement?
I know, that was quite something. Yeah, I apologize for that. There is no defense. I apologize. So, John, I'm right, though, right? I mean, you waited 30 minutes to say that, I hope, right? Do you agree with me?
It's funny, actually. The point that I wanted to make, a couple points, actually, and one of them is right in line with what Mike said, is that how much of this really just comes down to leadership. And I also work for a retail organization, like Mike did for many, many years, and I think that engagement can vary so much by not only location, by even department, based on the supervisor, the leadership that particular employee is seeing. And, you know, when you work for an organization where 75% of your workforce are part-timers and, you know, a good part of those are 15, 16, 17-year-old kids that are just working their way through high school and college, their impression of the company is that immediate supervisor. And if that's bad supervision or bad leadership, that's their impression of the whole company. So I don't know how much of it is something that the company as a whole can drive as much as what that individual leader, that individual supervisor can drive. So maybe it really needs to be more leadership development and making sure that you've got the right people managing and leading your people.
Can I just stop you for one second, Jen? Because I will let you come back to make your second point. But I wanted to jump in on this, and I want to throw this also back to Paul. Paul, some of this problem of incentives, you're my incentive guy, are enough these, especially these frontline managers, especially in these retail environments or where we have these like lots of hourly workers, lots of sort of transient workers in many cases, is part of it incentives? Like, are managers incented to do this, or are they incented to, hey, get the stuff done and get it done on time and in budget and get the hell out?
That's a huge question, and I think that's one of the things we have to look at when we talk about employee engagement is are the rewards, whether they be intrinsic or extrinsic, are they in alignment with the goals of the company? And that's always a good place to start, because 90% of the time managers are judged based on functional outputs. You know, they get paid based on hitting specific financial goals. And you know, if turnover is one of them, great, you know, but a lot of times it's not. I mean, it really is less about that. So I think you're right. I think there is some of that discussion where we've got to start holding managers accountable for what we consider an engagement statistic. And we can argue, and I think we'd have to get into some discussion of what is that? What is a proxy for engagement? The other thing I would say is, again, let's not put the baby in with the bathwater, so to speak, is that sometimes, and I know this is heretical, sometimes maybe engagement isn't important. In some jobs that are very transactionally driven, do I care? And it's a question I think you have to ask, because maybe the employee doesn't care. And I don't believe that you can have a truly engaged workforce if both sides aren't engaged. And I think that's another big problem with the employee engagement strategies that a lot of companies put in place, is they assume it's the company needs to do something. But you know what? As a manager, when I managed people, I expected things out of my people, and they had to play a part in this. And if you want to have a career at this company, you talk to me about what you want to accomplish. I can't do it for you. So I do think there's that whole discussion about how managers are paid, what do you find important at that level, and in a retail world, especially where you may have a very transient workforce or a very transactional job, you know, you got to ask yourself, is there a need? I don't want to be a jerk about it, but on the other hand, do I need to worry about whether I got 30% or 40%?
You know, that leads right into...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, yeah.
Oh, that's
go ahead,
okay.
Jennifer, I'm sorry.
That kind of leads into the second point that I wanted to make, is that what also makes it difficult to measure is that the expectation for engagement may vary drastically depending on the level of the organization that you're looking at. So part-time cashier, how engaged are you expecting them to be? You want them to be at work when they're supposed to be, cashing customers out efficiently, you know, hopefully friendly. But beyond that, how much do you really expect them to be engaged in the overall strategy or mission of the company? That's going to vary from what you would expect at a director level or a corporate level, a category manager who's really contributing to the overall financial performance of the company. I think it varies, and the expectation should vary depending on the type of employee that you're looking at.
Now, there's a great sentence right there where you talk about the financial performance of the company. How many, and this is what really kind of gets me too, is how many engagement processes, procedures, initiatives, whatever you want to call them, are instituted in order to drive greater profit for the company versus how many employee engagement practices are put in place because it's good for the employee. And as an employee, if you tell me the reason, you know, I read this stuff. I see as an employee, if I'm an intelligent employee, that employee engagement drives 14% greater bottom line results. I know you're doing this to make more money, not because you care about me. Right? So, yeah. I mean, sometimes I think we have to ask the question is, are we positioning this as the wrong thing in that we do employee engagement because it's the right thing to do for you as a human being, as opposed to I'm doing employee engagement because I need 2% more to the bottom line, and
look,
I wouldn't do it.
You know, I got another take on that. We're going to get to that in a second, hopefully. Trish, should we take one more call, you think? We have one more caller who's been hanging on, and then we'll sort of have everybody who wants to be on. Does that sound good?
I think you should make them wait even longer. Of course
make
you should
wait
a month. Come on now.
Minimum 30 minutes.
I'm going to have to run I'm running the switchboard next time. I'm just putting that out there.
You should. Trish, you should just take over. Your favorite shows are the ones I'm not on, apparently, so that's why. So let's go to only on hold for 8.5 minutes. Area code 732. You're on the HR Happy Hour Show.
Hi, good evening. I'm BJ Dallin from New Jersey. I just returned from the World Economic Forum in Davos this afternoon. And
nice.
A huge topic yesterday was employee engagement, mindfulness,
wow.
and active working and movement by world leaders and heads of some of the largest companies around the world talking about these very metrics, not an old-fashioned way of how HR used to be looked at, but what pretty much more of a virtuous well-being cycle where engagement was part of the mix, not the primary portion, and also addressing engagement and looking ahead to, you know, by the time we hit 2025, they're projecting 75% of the workforce is going to be working either remotely or part of the time remotely, and also it'll be the millennial group now, and how do you go about working and engaging this group and motivating, and the take on this, and it was pretty amazing to me, is that companies are looking at stress management, resilience, mindfulness, every bit as essential to productivity as a smartphone or a computer is now. And, you know, it was talked about by Richard Branson's a huge proponent. He's extremely successful. And all, you know, you think of the Virgin brands, you think everything to do with engagement. And he started his own, he's called it the B Team now, that is looking at it. You have at this summit discussing it was Ernst & Young. You have companies like Alcoa that have been doing it even in 2007, 2008. I just met with them a couple weeks ago at their headquarters in New York to discuss about some of their initiatives that they maintained even when the economy was really struggling. And, you know, it's statistically speaking, when the economy is on an upswing, employee engagement is a huge factor because that involves employee retention. So for the next 2 to 4 years, you know, statistically speaking, this is when companies really need to hunker down. And you know, what was discussed in this cycle, this well-being cycle, was, you know, discussion of the organizational performance, well-designed jobs and environment, having the employee voices, meaningful purpose. In the mix of it was engaging managers and what they called a downward spiral, which was below the line, was the long hours, lack of purpose, nobody cares, stress, disengaged.
None of us are familiar with that.
Right, but it was really fascinating to hear these strategic narratives being discussed.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting,
really,
especially in a forum like that, right, where think it's so much of, you know, global climate change or global macroeconomics or, you know, some of the...
Yesterday the topics were about, you know, wellness for employees and what's been done as far as retention.
Was there any discussion, I'm curious, because one of the things I've been kind of chewing on lately is this whole idea that companies believe they can affect employee engagement when they only cover about one-third of that person's life. In other words, I can only impact about one-third of my employee's life. The other two-thirds occur outside my walls. And that, in reality, engagement is a whole life kind of concept. Is my life at home halfway decent? Am I getting the appropriate support there? And I'm not suggesting that we get into Big Brother world where I start now dictating what happens at home. But engagement as a business, when I think of my employees, I really have to start concerning myself with this whole person as opposed to a third of a person, which is the person I see from 9 to 5.
Yeah, well, I didn't see that addressed yesterday per se, but I did see it.
Tell them to call me.
In,
I'll come up and chat about it with them.
I did see. I was at the Global Manufacturing Summit in D.C. In November, and to see the heads of the biggest companies in the world talking about engagement and. Some of these protocols that go beyond the work hours, some of the perks, so to speak, of engagement is they're allowing them to do charity work, some of it on their own time, some on corporate time, and earn charity donations based on contributions that these people get to select where certain monies are going to based on efforts. So it is going a bit further, and
cool.
Again, to use the example of Alcoa, just because it was recent, to see that they involve the families as well, to participate in these things. So it was pretty progressive, yesterday in particular to see, a day's worth of discussions talking about this well-being cycle. For employees, and also looking at how are they going to address, with the workforce, 2025, they're projecting 75% will be working in some form remotely at some part of their work life and the millennials.
This is fantastic input. I'm so glad you called. Could you just for me and for the audience, could you just say your name one more time so everybody catches it? Because I think you said it kind of quickly, and I'm not sure.
Oh,
some people are tweeting at me that they want to.
Sure. It's BJ Dallin, and my Twitter handle is @BodyWorksBJ.
@BodyWorksBJ. Did I get that right?
Uh-huh.
Wow, that's really awesome. I so appreciate the call. Thanks for hanging out with us for a while if you want. We've got about 13 more minutes on the show. Great input.
I
got to
ask, did you
call.
Go in on a private plane, though?
I'm going to tell you what, Davos, right?
No comment.
Because I heard 1,700 private planes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing,
well,
my first time.
Trish, I think it sounds to me my goal of this being the final employee engagement conversation ever is going to be just failure. If they're talking about it at Davos, right, with world leaders and business leaders and, captains and
they could have just dialed in tonight. They didn't even have to be
No kidding. Trish, how can we get the show to Davos? That's the next goal. We have some goals for the next couple of years. Right,
well, now we have our connection.
Exactly. Now we have at least we know a name. So the we have the Rose Parade though next year. That's going to happen, right? I think. I'm pretty sure it's going.
I would hope so. Yeah. I would hope so.
HR Happy Hour Live from the Rose Parade.
Yeah. So, shows on the road are definitely fun.
We've got just a few minutes left. We got about 12 or so minutes left. This is the HR Happy Hour Show, episode 200. Apparently, I have to say this after 49 minutes, Trish, apparently not the last conversation about employee engagement ever. I probably failed. But my name's Steve Bose from Charlotte, is of course with us. A bunch of really cool folks on the line. Good back channel tonight on Twitter. We're keeping an eye on that. Our hashtag's HR Happy Hour, of course. A few folks who are on the line listening in, and that's great. So hello to you guys. If anybody who's actually listening to my voice right now who is on the phone and wants to come on the show and have me open up your line, please press 1 on your phone, and I will do that. There's about half a dozen folks hanging out on the line. If you just want to hang out and just listen, that's all good as well. Really fun stuff, really interesting stuff. You know, and I'm glad we were able to get so many folks on board tonight, Trish. I think, and I'm happy to be wrong. I'm happy to be, like, told. I did have one other point, though. I did have one other point. And maybe this fed into a little bit of what BJ was just talking about from Davos, and maybe anyone else can chime in on this as well. Do these efforts, these initiatives, this sort of let's smart people like ourselves talk of being concerned about engagement, do we do ourselves a disservice when on the other side of the coin we're saying, like, there's no more jobs, or the future of work is not a job like we know it, or we've always known it. It's a series of gigs. It's a series of contract assignments. Companies like Uber, right? Just to use an easy example, Uber is the model of the modern company going forward in this networked economy. And so how can Uber have a culture? How can Uber have engagement when 95% of the people who sort of operate under the brand name of Uber are really just a loose confederation of, you know, barely linked people who don't work for Uber at all, right? But they're just operating under that brand name. If that's the future of work and of workplaces, is that what's going to kill, like, engagement/culture discussions?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's changing. Like I said, I don't think it looks like it did, you know, 15 to 20 years ago when this all came up and we started surveying people. I think it's different. I mean, part of engagement, I really hated this when I started hearing it, but I think as I get older, it rings true a little bit, is, you know, are you proud of that brand name that you work for? And so, whether it's Uber or some other, like you said, loosely associated group of people, if you still have pride in where you work, if it's still helping you make a good living and you feel like you're treated fairly and that people respect you, again, this is like by my standards of what would make me engaged with a company, I don't even have to still be working there. You know, I'll give you an example. Like, I had someone post something on Facebook about Big Four public accounting and, you know, how they're basically, you know, just having indentured servants and whatever. Hey, I worked 60 and 70 hours a week at PwC for years and loved it. And the first thing I wanted to do was fight back, because for me at that time in my life, and I knew what I was getting into, that totally made sense. And that was the exact right place for me to be. And I will fight to the end for that company, even though I don't work there anymore. It really offended me. So I think engagement even goes on beyond being the place you're getting a paycheck from. Are you still proud of where you worked? Are you proud of what you accomplished there? Do you still have connections with people there? To me, engagement, and maybe this is a little bit where Paul comes from, it's a relationship. It's a two-way relationship that happens to be with the greater company. And for me, that can go on much longer than just the time that you're under that employment. So,
And truthfully, Steve, I think, you know, you hit on an interesting point in that Uber does create kind of this outlier discussion about employees and connections and all of that. And you know, it's like, you know, do I think that within 2 to 3 years we're going to have 100% of the companies that work like Uber? No. You know, it's like, I still don't have flying cars. So let's not say that Uber is the future and it's going to come fast, because it is the future, but it's going to be 25 years. Okay. So let's not jump off the cliff yet. But I do think it brings up this discussion, and maybe this is where we should be going. Instead of talking about engagement, let's talk about purpose, mission, value, commitment, meaning. Because what I'm hearing is that if a company connects with the things I think are meaningful, I can be engaged. So maybe I should be measuring how well I'm satisfying your need for meaning, and not. And then engagement becomes a secondary, or that's a, you know what I mean? So I can be an Uber. Like, there's a woman here in town in Greenville or South Carolina just bounced Uber and said, look, you can't play because you won't give us a list of the people that drive for you. And somebody else said, hey, you know, on Facebook said, well, that just figures, you know, South Carolina sucks and I'm an Uber driver. And she's going nuts because she can't drive now for Uber, but she found a company she can connect to.
Hey, but hey, Paul, it's Mike. Is there really any indication that Uber's like really the, you know, filled with engaged employees anyway? I think Uber is a lot more about the customer experience and the coolness of the service and the technology, if you will. I'm not sure because I know for sure that 6 months ago or less, drivers in California were trying to organize with the Teamsters, the Uber drivers.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me in the least. I was just suggesting that here's a woman who has an obvious connection to Uber and thinks they're great, and it's because it jives into her worldview of, you know, the man sucks, and I can be a contractor through Uber.
That's true.
You know,
Paul, the man does suck. That is true, right? There's no doubt.
Yeah. But I guess my point is just because Uber is cool and people love the experience of being picked up in a black car and it comes right to your hotel and you can see where your car is going to be, doesn't make them a great employer. It doesn't mean that their employees are happy. It doesn't mean their employees are satisfied. And it doesn't mean that they're employees at Walmart. I mean, it's all relative. Although if you listen to the press stories and the perceptions, you know, it's all over the place. That's all I'm saying. Part of engagement, I think, is what people that work there feel at the end of the day, much less so than the cool factor. Because Apple has also had employees at Apple have also tried to unionize in the Apple stores. Apple fans go to the Apple store and shop, right? I mean, they love it. We love the experience. That doesn't mean that the people with smiling faces are happy. That would be true at any organization. Anyway, I'm done.
Yeah, I think those are great points, Mike and Paul as well. I'll say this last thing and I'll leave it there because we're almost out of time. I think in some of these kinds of constructs, whether it's talking about engagement or, you know, commitment or living the brand or all of these things we'd like to talk about, I think we sort of are a little bit sometimes still rooted in this notion of more stable and less transitory employment situations and I think the trends are clearly going in the other direction. They're going towards, you know, there's no security in any job anymore, and there hasn't been for a while, but there's even more of a more prevalence of saying, we, you know, focusing on core competencies and farming out every other piece of the business that we can farm out to other companies, right? And we could do a whole show on that probably, but
yeah.
I think sometimes we think too much like, hey, we ask too much for employees without giving enough in return. And one of the things we don't give them anymore at all is any sense of security, right, no matter who they are.
And I'm with you on that. I do think it's a one-sided conversation, and I do think that's one of the reasons there is this problem with engagement is because they look at engagement, companies look at engagement as a way to wring another dime out of the system, and employees are the way they do it, instead of looking at engagement as a way that I can enhance the lives of the people that give me the other 99 cents. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep. Hey, Trish, we're like, by my reckoning, we got like 3 minutes to go or so. I don't know what time it is in St. Louis, but I know here, the show's almost
It would be 3 minutes
over.
To go as well.
We should,
hey, I will say we have
say some last words.
Do we have anyone else holding on the line? Because I think John
I have four
Asian.
People still online. Nobody
okay.
pushed
He's waiting
one.
For
if
the wheels
four...
to come off. So
okay.
I think when the line's open,
on hold
it may
right
be
now,
in the,
wants to
the after show.
Get on board. Please press one. We will. I'll keep all the lines open for the after show. So for folks who may be listening for the first time or folks who've forgotten, at the top of the hour, the live stream on the web live will cut off. Everybody who's on the phone right now who's called in will still be able to hear me. We'll hang out and chat for a few more minutes after the top of the hour, but that will not stream live on the web any longer. So while we've got like about a couple of minutes left, we figure we'd wrap the show at the top of the hour, and then we'll hang out for a minute afterwards. So, Trish, this was loads of fun. So you're right, as usual. About the live show
you.
Being a good time. You're right.
Everyone needs to lobby to keep the show live.
No, we will. We will do another live show as soon as we can. Well, I'll see you next week at the Brandon Hall Conference, which I'll mention for you. And
Thank you.
Can maybe look at our calendars and figure out when we can schedule the next live show. That would be superb. We will do that. What else should we need to mention? Thank Paul Hebert, of course, for jumping in and being a big part of the show tonight. Mike Vandervoort, Jenny Payne, BJ, whose last name I don't remember again, but thank you for that awesome call from straight from the ski slopes of Davos.
BJ Dolan.
Dolan,
that's right. Everyone needs to follow her.
We need to follow her and like ruin her life for the next.
She's only got 59,000 followers.
Ah, she's more
I
popular
love her.
Than all of us. She was fantastic
no,
in New Jersey, my home state. So she was awesome. Did I forget anybody, Trish? I don't think I did. Did I catch everybody?
No, just thanks to everyone for listening and.
Yeah, fantastic. 200 shows. HRHappyHour.net. Get us on iTunes. Just search for HR Happy Hour. Android devices. I use Stitcher Radio. There's lots of other apps. We're on all the apps, Podcast Addict, Overcast, everything. So thanks very much from the HR Happy Hour. Goodbye to the live stream, folks. After show, folks, hang out. We'll hang out for a few more minutes. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for a great 200 episodes and hopefully 200 more. All right, everybody still with me?
I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm
we're here.
Yep.
I opened up two more lines, area code 678 and area code 216.
Who do we have?
Susan.
Oh, good. Hey, guys.
May I have Tim Gardner?
Tim,
oh,
what's
hey,
up,
Tim.
How are you?
Hey, Gardner's son.
Well, thanks for
good
listening, you guys.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
How could we miss 200? That's awesome.
I know.
Big.
See, I told him. I said, we have to do it live. You know what? We need to do one live from Cleveland.
We do. Do it.
We can from the Disrupt. We will figure that out. I'm
That's
excited.
A Thursday night also. We could do it. We could work it out, even if
it was
a short version.
Live from Cleveland.
Event,
it's a blossom.
Wouldn't it be going on right when we were doing the show at the same time, kind of?
You could do it 9 o'clock.
9
yeah,
o'clock?
We could do
yeah,
it.
We'll figure
yeah,
it
we could work it out. We'll figure it out. Yeah. It'd be fun.
I might be too drunk if we start at 9.
You'll be too drunk.
Wait, you drink, Hebert? Come on.
Somebody said that to me the other day. I had to laugh. They said, I didn't know you drank. And I said, well, yeah, it's just that every time you've seen me at some place that all they serve is wine, you know, I don't drink wine.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny.
There's this was a load of fun. There are two more folks on the line who I didn't open up their lines because they didn't press 1-646 area code and a 786 area code. If either of you guys actually want to open up your line, press 1 and I will open it up. I don't like to sort of guess. Oh, you both did. Thank you.
Hi, it's Victoria.
Oh, Victoria. You should have jumped
on,
man.
Hey, can I just say something real quick before we carry on any much longer? We're not streaming live on the web. All of this stuff makes the archive, though. So when people come back to the website or download the podcast, they do hear all of this. So just be advised that this stuff does make the archive of the show after the fact.
That's a pretty good disclaimer, Steve.
It is. Don't make me have to edit it out, Zupan, because I won't bother.
Legal muster in New York. I'm all for it.
It must, right? It must.
So I heard one was Victoria. Who was the other person?
Victoria?
It's John from Miami.
Oh, hey, John.
Oh,
I was thinking you were calling
Miami.
In.
Oh, John.
Miami.
I know both those guys.
I know. It's like a big family reunion. I love this.
We see. More live. More live.
I know. You know what? I'll just take over the show. That's what I'm working for, really.
Trish,
I'm just easing into it.
My contract is only till 9 o'clock. I don't have to do anything else.
No. I'm calling the shots in 2015, Bose. How it's going to be?
Please. I tell you
then,
what.
Then it becomes HR After Dark, and then I think we
I like that. HR After Dark.
This whole thing started because of you, Trish. Anyway, when you were talking, or emailing or something, and you're like, oh,
yeah,
I was talking about this on Facebook on Sunday morning with, like, 17 people. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, what's with you?
We had, like 100 comments. That's what I mean. I think that it's it's relevant. It's just evolving. And so, yeah, I definitely, I mean, we could talk a lot more about it and more specifically. And I think maybe once the, you know, once the people that were kind of bringing it up originally, maybe when we come up with something a little more concrete to share, maybe that's the next step is, you know, sharing it back out in a more defined way.
Well, I think it's also frustrating. That's another indicator of that 100 questions or 100 comments is that we've, this is a frustrating topic. We can't get past it. We can't figure it out, and it's driving us crazy.
Right.
Well, right, and that's sort of when I wrote, the thing I wrote about that started this, at least from my perspective, is just like not that it's not important or not that it's not potentially valuable. It's just we've spent 20 years trying to figure it out. We continue to be unable to. So maybe let's take a year and do other things that we might be better at. That was really the take.
Yeah. See, and the only thing is, though, is I think it's one of those things. It's almost, to me, it's almost, engagement is almost like religion. I think a lot of places have it figured out. They have it figured out on their own terms, and it's not one thing for every person or group. So it's
that's huge. But see,
yeah.
Michael, the problem with that is, as a consultant, I can't sell you anything if that's true.
Yeah, but that's your problem. You need to find a new career.
I agree with you 1,000%. And actually, you know, I'm in the business of reinforcing behavior. So this whole discussion of engagement, I still think is a management problem. And I think we don't train managers well enough. And if we would do that, I would rather, no matter how big my company is, if somebody came into me and said, Paul, you're the CEO of GM, I would say, first of all, let's get bought by Toyota. Or the second thing I would say is that let's train our managers to be more engaged and get rid of all the systems that reward people and do peer-to-peer, because frankly, we're trying to solve a human problem with a technology solution, and that's the bottom line, and it's not working.
Yeah, this isn't all technology, though. It's about, hey, Jen Payne, you still on the line?
I am, yeah.
We were talking a couple weeks ago about your service awards thing. What was the average length of the people that worked at your company?
Well, we start recognizing at 25 years. We had all the way up to one person that's been there 50 years.
And that's not uncommon in the grocery industry, which is perceived as by many people as kind of a shit industry. And yet people work there. And I don't think they worked there for 50 years because it's desperation. I think they worked there for 50 years.
No, they love the business. They love the business.
Yeah.
They love the people, the customers. You talk to them and most will say, I can't imagine doing anything else with my life.
And Publix was the same way. I mean, I'd go around. One of the customs at Publix was to say, how long have you been with the company? What's your job? What department are you from? And I'd say, I've been 7 years. And, you know, I'd be like the least senior by exponentially, maybe like 2 or 3 times. Most people were there 20 years plus, many like Jen, 50.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is you get people that, you know, people that are proud that I've been a cashier at the same store for 25 or 30 years, and they're really, really proud of that. They're proud of the fact that they've been able to make a contribution to that individual store, to that community that they worked in. You know, and it's doing a simple job. It's not, you know, rocket science. It's not contributing anything major strategically, but they're proud of it.
And probably should be.
Jeff, do you feel like, John, and those types of people, like the sort of, I mean, there's commitment there to those really long-term employees, those great employees. Like, are they a little different to you in your mind than, say, the college kid you also have working alongside them, just in their mindset and how they think about it?
Is there a difference between the mindset of the two?
Yeah, my point is this. In a lot of businesses, a lot of people are just kind of going to churn through. That's just natural, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. But, you know, I think there's also a conversation, and you know, when I mentioned the live part of the show, engagement and what it means being different depending on the employees that you're talking about, the level that you're talking about. You know, and maybe it's just a matter of how do you get them to at least be committed, whatever that level of commitment is or whatever that expectation is for the time that they're there. We don't expect that at 16 years old you're necessarily going to be a cashier for 50 years. I mean, are there people that may do that? Sure. But, you know, what does it mean to be engaged or committed for the year or the 8 months or the 2 years that you may work there?
Yeah.
Let me ask this question, because I find it a very interesting conversation, because if what you're saying is true, then you guys are the industry everybody should be looking at. But my question would be, your first, if you've got 50-year people, you got 25-year people, what's your turnover in the first 18 months of a person getting a job to 18 months? Is this an industry that basically sloughs off everybody that's crap quickly? And not that that's a bad thing, you know what I mean? But it's an industry that basically ends up self-selecting for long-term employees and does that fairly quickly over the first 18 months of the work. Does that make sense, that question?
Yeah. I don't know what the specific – I mean, I know overall turnover is probably, for us anyway, I don't know, it's probably 60 to 70% a year overall. But
is that for people that have been there less than 18 months, less than 24 months?
That's overall. I don't think we actually have looked at it based on tenure. That's just a measurement overall company. But when you look at management ranks, which tend to be your longer-term employees, mm-hmm. it's only like 7 or 8% per year. There's a huge difference.
Yeah, that would be an interesting study. I mean, one of the things we used to do with every client we go into when they start talking about turnover is start looking at turnover based on time so that we could pinpoint in somebody's life cycle at an employer, when does that uptick occur? Is it at 12 months, 6 months, 4 months? And we could actually, for a company that does uniform, you know, they go around and collect uniform Cintas, they could pinpoint that about 90% of their turnover with route drivers occurred between the 6th and the 8th month.
Paul, I can tell you with Home Depot, which in my, you know, the way it's structured and the way customer service is oriented, it equates a lot to the grocery industry. Not specifically, but there's a lot of similarities. We tracked it at 24 months. If you could get someone
mm-hmm.
to last 24 months, they would potentially, you know, there was a higher percentage. I don't remember. We're going back to 2008.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a much higher percentage of success.
Yeah.
And interestingly, with managers, our managers turned over at 12 months because they were working 10 to 20 hours more per week than our full-time hourly employees.
And that probably coincided with whether they hit their goal and got their bonus, too.
Oh, sure it did.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think
that was the
too,
reason we found out
months.
Is that the people quit because they found out that there was no way they were going to hit their bonus, so they started looking for jobs.
Yeah.
I think beyond just bonuses, though, I think 12 months is a pretty standard number nowadays for it takes you, you know, maybe in the first 6 months you're still being optimistic if you're, you know, you're not quite yet. Part of the company, if you don't feel like you're fitting in by 12 months or that your manager cares about you or that maybe there's something weird with the CEO, that's when you
mm-hmm.
will start looking, you know, many industries. I know when I was in the IT consulting industry, we saw that it was between 6 and 12. And I'm sure if I had gone back, we could have pinpointed it probably more to a specific month. But yeah, we saw the most turnover there between 6 and 12.
You know, we can bitch and moan about it. I still think it comes back to manager training and somebody's going to have to prove me very,
very
wrong.
It all does, Paul. It clearly all does.
But we spend so little money on training managers to do that job, and we would rather install a $6 million engagement plan than just send some managers to training and hold them accountable.
But I don't understand.
Tell you though, I'm kind of not on board with this whole train the managers. You know, I've been in companies where we threw a lot of money at manager training, and it didn't really make a difference because
but you didn't fire
to me it goes beyond. No, you just have to have a manager that walks in the door in the morning and says, "Hi, how are you? Oh, did your dog die? I'm really sad about that." Like, I don't know that you can train somebody to be a nice person, and I think that's a big myth.
Wait,
I think that's part of it.
No, but if I'm managing people, I should be able to find managers and understand, instead of promoting people into manager roles because of functional excellence, I promote them into manager roles because of human excellence.
Well, no one's going to do that because it doesn't necessarily drive the money.
Well, that's
you're gonna,
and that's
you're
where
still
we gonna get
promote
the whole,
assholes that sell the most shit.
I get,
I mean, that's,
and I know no
assholes.
I don't like it.
Trash. Wow, that's like pretty strong words here on the back channel. I remind you that this is being recorded.
it's going to be on the archive. At Publix, you can see stores where you could see where the manager took the same path through the store every day. He went right to left around the store, counterclockwise or whatever. And the longer he walked the store saying hello, good morning, and the more he was likely to get distracted or she, the lower the scores in the departments were when he walked the route every day. Whereas if you walked
a
different route every day.
That is an awesome point, and I'm going to throw this out there. And I bang the drum for technology all the time. Why couldn't we use kind of activity tracker, proximity tracker, iBeacon technology? It all exists today to track all this stuff and feed that back in, overlay that against things like turnover, customer satisfaction, engagement stores, so on and so forth, to have an idea when you promote that new person into that managerial role to say, you know, our successful managers do this, and this is how they do it, right? We spend the grocery stores, Jennifer and Mike, right? You guys spend millions of dollars figuring out where to put the milk and where to put the vegetables, right? That's a really big deal,
exactly.
Right? Right. Let's just boom, slap a little. I don't care about the privacy either. Let's slap a little wearable technology on these folks and actually get the hard data. I was just in a very heated. I'm going, Trish. You can tell me to shut up if you want to. I was in a very heated conversation today.
A company right now. Do a startup called Engagement Pit. That's it. We'll just
Engagement.
Quiet.
That was
a very start. Engagement.
Yeah, we'll slap a
Fitbit
on every
manager.
We'll
probably get like $10 million by tomorrow.
And these kind of
high touch. We can all retire.
Yeah. And these kind of high touch, high customer service, lots of people involved, businesses, proximity tracking, activity tracking. It's a natural fit for it. I think it's a natural fit. I do. There it is. I said it. Track it.
Conversation's over. Drop the mic.
Not to give you the B school answer, but I'm going to give it to you. If it doesn't have a direct impact on expanding shareholder value or shareholder equity, they're not going to do it.
Well, no, John, that's huge, 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 huge. I had that conversation today. Is employee engagement's a long game, and people are measured at the top on short game, and that's the problem with engagement.
Listen, you want to hear something even scarier about engagement? And I'm gonna let you guys in on a conversation I had with someone who is at a firm that's in New York City that rhymes with BlackRock. You know what the guy says to me at lunch? He says in front of the dean, he says, I'm talking to my CEO, and 70% of our expenses are HR-related. You know what we're trying to do? We're trying to automate it. We're trying to get rid of all this stuff.
Yep.
And he's telling me all this I'm sorry, I was going to say a bad word. He's telling me all this stuff, and I'm listening to him, and I'm like, didn't you have this thing in Harvard? Aren't you guys supposed to be engaged? How much of this is, I'll have to say it, how much
shit.
Of this is bullshit? You know?
All of it.
Pretty much.
I sat with my own CEO talking about wellness programs. He goes, you know what, Paul? I don't give a shit about wellness.
No,
what
I
care about is saving money.
Price. I want my stock to go up.
Exactly. And engagement is a long game. Engagement's a long game. That's what I'm saying. That's why we have a problem.
Cynical.
I thought I was cynical. Is it cynical if it's the truth? That's a big, that's a philosophical question, but.
All right. Oh, I got to drop off. Thanks for letting me be part of the magical
200.
Thanks for
calling in.
You bet. Paul, I'm going to call you for lunch next week in your Dunbar list so you can say I
had
this conversation.
That's right. You are on my Dunbar list. Absolutely.
All right, I'm out of here. See you guys later.
All right, I got to go too.
We're,
my wife's yelling at me.
We should probably wrap it up then. So thanks, everyone. Appreciate everyone being a part of the show, being a part of the HR Happy Hour fun and games tonight, and look forward to more of these live shows. Yeah, so Trish and I will sort it out. We'll
fun.
Do a couple more as soon as we can, and it was good stuff. So thank you.
All right, bye.
All right,
stay
sounds
warm.
Good. Night, everyone.
Congratulations on your 200.
Thank you.
I will play us out if I can find a song here. Let's see. How about...